The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.
I'm Hank Stoltz, and this is the podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners. We're very pleased that Ryan Kittredge is here, the founder of ClearPath Financial Partners. And Ryan, we're going to be talking today about something that I think is really the heart of what you do. And as people tune into the podcast, I think it's going to answer a lot of questions that they probably have. And that is, when do people give you a call? When do they really start to think about, hey, retirement all of a sudden isn't that far away? How long do I have? When should I start to make some plans? So let's talk about that a little bit today. Just give people a little bit of a timeline.
Absolutely. Thanks, Hank. Thanks for having me here. The questions that people often come to us, because really a lot of our clients that we've been working with over time started, they were still working, but they were on that runway to retirement where they knew they were, you know, doing the right things. They were getting their kids through school. They were saving into their retirement plans, managing and paying down debt, all of these things. But then they start to think about, okay, but when 3 to 5 years from now, if we're looking to at least have the ability to be able to retire, how do we make sense of all of these things, right? Like that they've sort of accumulated over time, everything from Social Security credits to pensions, retirement plans, an old 401k here, a Roth IRA there, an old 403b from when I worked at the nonprofit. Oh, you know, by the way, I have this, you know, stock that I inherited from my dad or may have, you know, gotten from my company. But so like, great, I have these things, but like, how do they all work in terms of providing us a paycheck basically in retirement, like producing income? And that's a bit of a different paradigm. So that's the transition that oftentimes we're helping people kind of anticipate, plan for, and then, you know, navigate through.
The whole runway of 3 to 5 years, is that enough time? And do people tend to, when they come to you, procrastinate? Do people, and it's probably the opposite way too, but people tend to procrastinate and say, I'm retiring next month and I wanted to talk to you about, is 3 to 5 years enough time to put that plan together and check everything out?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So, I mean, it's all different points at which people, I don't want to say just start to think about it, but I guess get serious about planning for it. And it totally depends, right? You know, different people, some are well ahead of the game and others kind of let some, and then they're, you know, the thing happens, they're like, cool, let's figure it out now, right? So we have had people that, to your point, are like, hey, I put in my retirement papers last week and now I'm retired and I think I need to figure this thing out, right? And then other people could be a decade or more, but they're just very forward thinking and they're planners and they really want to do everything they can to best position themselves and have the time, because absolutely more time to plan and to make, you know, implement the changes that can help is better, right? Is 3 to 5 enough? I think it gives you a pretty good runway. I think to consider it earlier would be better, but that, I would say, Hank, that's almost probably just the average of when people start to see the light at the end of the tunnel, it becomes real, but also like, oh crap, I need to, you know, I can't just show up and put in my notice and say, I'm retired, great. Like, where do I get money from? And at that point, so I think the 3 to 5 tends to be that kind of trigger point where we see a lot of those people.
So, you know, let's talk a little bit about that revenue. Just as you were saying, you're pulling all of these different things together, something from a job that may have been 20 years ago. And of course, sometimes, Ryan, all of a sudden it comes up. It's been much in the news about buyouts that are happening, whether it's your company or whether you're working for the government, and a buyout is different at 40, 50, and 60.
Right.
You're looking at this buyout and you're 60 years old and suddenly you're thinking, well, geez, I was planning on working another 5 or 7 years, but what am I going to do? Maybe I take this buyout now and all of a sudden retirement is closer. And maybe that even starts to become part of that pile that you're pulling together. Well, you know, they'll pay me for the next 6 months or they'll pay me for the next year if I take this buyout.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And we've seen a lot of those. And I mean, more, you know, happening more regularly now with government positions. But for years, especially different companies in certain industries have been essentially trying to reduce their workforce or to save costs. And, you know, some of it, frankly, is probably a bit of ageism and saying, well, you know, we've had this tenured person and we can get some younger blood in here and like they can hopefully do that work and we can pay them less. Whatever kind of sparked it, the fact is that we've had a lot of people that some kind of saw it coming, right? Others were completely blindsided, but the company will say, hey, you've been really valued here. You know, we're this position, we're eliminating it, you know, essentially. But because of your years of service, we're going to give you this, you know, lump sum payment, and or it could be a salary continuation. But it often comes with a what's called a vero document that you need to sign that says, hey, I will take your money and I'm in agreement with this. But what you're doing is waiving your rights to take action against them, right? To sue them and say this was discriminatory or this was unfair. It's sort of like, take this money and don't sue us. That's, you know, one type. Others are these pension plans where they've been, a lot of these companies think of ones that have been around forever, right? Like the Johnson & Johnsons of the world, where they had all of these defined benefit pension plans that they promised that they would pay their retirees. But just like every pension administrator in the world, they're saying, oh boy, people are living a lot longer than we calculated or guesstimated that they would be 50 years ago. So boy, we're really, this is like a massive expense. So sometimes they're offering, you know, these voluntary lump sums where they'll say, hey, do you want to, instead of receiving this monthly income at retirement, now instead you can take a lump sum. And you got to weigh that out. And, you know, sometimes it's offered like that, Hank, where it hadn't been before. And in some cases, you know, like, for instance, UMass locally, their pension always has the, do you want a monthly income and at which age and which percentage do you want there if your spouse survives you, or do you take a lump sum? And so that's kind of a whole different scenario where you kind of have to weigh out the pros and cons, right? Like lump sum, you have control, you have flexibility, you determine how to invest it, when to take money from it. On the other hand, the, you know, the pension sort of monthly income annuity or pension payments offer longevity protection. You know, no matter how long you live, you won't outlive it. It pays forever, as long as you live or you and a spouse. It offers predictability with income, those kind of things, but you also, you know, don't have control over it should circumstances change.
For most people, though, hopefully 3 to 5 years out, you see it coming, you're going to plan, and now you're looking for, as Ryan, you just said, looking for that income plan, Social Security. But as we are constantly reminded, if Social Security is the only thing you've got, you're probably going to be in trouble. But Social Security is certainly a big part of that monthly income plan for retirees. What should somebody, you're 3 to 5 years out, you're getting ready for retirement, what are you looking for when it comes to Social Security? What do you need to know about that when you're putting together your monthly income?
For most, Social Security is one of those pillars of their retirement income. And if they worked for a non-state, you know, entity or essentially any job that they were paying Social Security taxes on and earning credits, which are most of the jobs out there, then yeah, they're going to have a Social Security benefit. But the questions that come up are everything from, okay, well, if I retire at 65, in a Medicare eligible, should I also be claiming Social Security at that same age? Or do I wait the extra, you know, it could be a year and a half or a couple of years until your quote unquote full retirement age, which for most is 66 and change or 67. Or they said, well, you know, I heard you can even let it roll up longer, and if you wait till 70, you get the max benefit. So there's a lot of considerations. And then from there, Hank, it goes into, well, what's my benefit relative to my spouse's, and what would the survivor benefit be in you know, either scenario? So the answers are different, right? There are no, I guess the rules of thumb are, don't claim it while you're still working if you're before full retirement age, because there's a massive offset to it. There's an earnings cap. So if your full retirement age is 67 and you're 65 and you're still working, well, you may not want to claim it, right? So that could be a problem. Or if, you know, if you're retired and you would have to withdraw a very high percentage from your other accounts, your savings and 401ks and so forth, then it could sort of be to the detriment of the health of your portfolio if you wait too long. So in those cases, you may want to tap it prior to that so that you can mitigate that withdrawal percentage. So those are kind of a couple things, but I mean, everyone's situation is unique, and we've seen some where it's sort of a tiered approach where one spouse, especially if their age differences, may claim at one point to sort of lock in, start receiving a benefit, but then they may, once the other spouse claims, be able to have a jump, you know, an increase in their benefit because of a spousal rule around Social Security. So yeah, I guess what I'm saying, Hank, is there are, like a lot of things, it depends on different factors, and it's unique.
You had talked about pensions, that people are lucky enough to have that pension. So Social Security, probably then the other big piece, obviously, if you're getting that pension each month. But for a lot of people, they've been putting into their 401k or their Roth IRA. You're in, again, kind of in our 3 to 5 runway. You're starting to think about these things. Where's the money going to come from? Mm-hmm. Social Security is part of it. And now you're thinking about my 401k. And what am I going to do with that? Do I cash that out? Is that something that is each month? What are my what are my penalties for my 401k? That's a big part of people's retirement.
Indeed. Indeed it is. Yeah. And I know we're just kind of scratching the surface here on these different topics, which is probably all that we have time for. And frankly, all that may be interesting from a radio show perspective. But yeah, I mean, that's another big one. And I guess what I'll say first is, just based on all the questions we've had over the years, is that it's usually not like an all or nothing thing. So when people use words like, oh, should I just cash out that 401k plan, or should I convert it to a Roth IRA? Or if it's a sort of an all or nothing thing, especially if it means withdrawing it and having it be a taxable event, that's usually not the best approach, right? But it is a combination of looking at the accounts that you have, seeing really when you aggregate them, kind of what is the makeup, right, in terms of the asset allocation. Now, some people have had 401k plans or 403bs or, you know, an old IRA from decades ago, and they may have invested it into stocks or mutual funds or what have you, that sound, you know, was a good idea at the time and was appropriate for their time horizon. But we've noticed that a lot of those static plans, those sort of the ones from many years past, oftentimes are not well diversified. They tend to be either overly concentrated or perhaps too high of risk for someone who may need access to those funds and start drawing from it in just a few years, right? Maybe it was great when they were 45 and they said, I've got a couple decades to just let it run. And by the way, at that point, it may not have been as big a portion, right, in their plans. So it's taken a look at all of them. It's probably not doing anything too extreme, but you really have to look at them in conjunction, which ones can be consolidated or streamlined so you don't have this bifurcated strategy. Because what we've found is, you know, while it's easy to sort of ignore those little pieces that you accumulate along the way, it's really hard to make a proper plan that you can implement with, you know, with predictability, with having a scattered approach like that. So I think the same tax status accounts, especially if assuming they're liquid and there's no penalties for doing so, could be consolidated, and you want an approach that will meet a combination of your shorter term needs of income potentially in the next handful of years, but also still enough growth to keep purchasing power and hopefully provide you income while still beating inflation in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, that has to be, especially in the time that we're in right now. And if you're in that 3 to 5 year window, that has to be where you start to get, I would think, a little bit nervous. I have this IRA, I have my 401k. Gee, things look good at the end of this month. Gee, the stock market wasn't as great this month, but here it's up or it's down. When you're 3 years out and you're counting on that for retirement, you can start to get a little bit nervous. Is there, as you're talking about, you know, you want to be aggressive enough that it can grow and hopefully stay ahead of inflation. But as we get towards 65, 67, 70, it would be natural, I would think, to say, well, but I want to be safer. I'm a little more risk adverse than I was in my 40s. But should you be taking your 401k, putting it into something else? Are there other places where that money for your Roth IRA should go, or is one better than the other?
So each plan, especially if they're employer sponsored plans like a 401k, they're all unique in terms of they do have some of their own rules of term, you know, meaning when you can take it and at what point, but they also have completely different investment options, right? So some are very, I'd want to say maybe basic or more limited, where you've got 10 different funds, and then you have these target date funds coinciding with an age of expected retirement, simply just based on your date of birth and what age you are. And then other plans have dozens and dozens of more exotic or sort of specialized types of funds. So that being said, generally, if you're approaching that point where it could just be a few years where you might need to tap into this, and you're either going to be retired, or you're maybe going to semi-retire and go part-time or take a lesser paying job but supplement that, you might consider taking at least, you know, I would say at least 5 or 6 years worth of income, right? So let's say $1 million portfolio, you know, 5% withdrawal rate would be, you know, you're drawing 50 grand a year from it. Well, you may want to have 25, 30, 35% of it in something safe, right? Mm. That's not as correlated to the ebbs and flows of the economy and the markets that you see, right? So those could be anything from fixed accounts, money market, high yield savings. If you're in an IRA, you can buy things like CDs, you know, and have a little bit of a CD ladder and still get a decent yield. Short-term bonds, you know, those kind of things, right? Depending on, so that way, Hank, you still know that your portfolio has growth potential and will over time grow its purchasing power, but you still have a sleeve. And it doesn't have to be just a non-plan, right? Some people, if they have more in bank savings, they may need a smaller sleeve in their retirement plan, right? If they have just a big retirement account but very lean bank savings and not a big cushion, then they probably need to be a little bit more conservative in the retirement plan. So it's sort of, how do each of the pieces, are they functioning appropriately? Are they in the best place to optimize the risk return profile and meet your goals? But I think even more importantly, other than sort of just, you know, the ingredients in a recipe are important, right? But it's the proportions of them that also matter, right? If you have lousy ingredients in the right mix, it may taste okay,
yeah.
But you could have great ingredients, but the recipe is all wrong and it still will taste lousy. So both are important.
Just mentioned CDs as well. And as we talk about this mix that you need to have, bank savings is still an important part of your retirement plan. It does seem as if people are a little more into the 401ks and other ways to save. And we'll talk about stocks in a moment, but bank savings still a part of that plan?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's all about based on what's popular, right? So we're coming off of a run where stocks have done very well and Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are gaining attention. And, you know, I think, Hank, the things that to keep in mind are what's being talked about. They may be the most popular or the most newsworthy, clickworthy, you know, because they're sort of interesting and sexy, exotic kind of thing. The things that work really well over time, like blue chip stocks and government treasury bonds, bills, and bank savings, you know, they may not get as much attention because they are boring, but they work, right? And sometimes you want some of the boring things that work, and that's okay. So absolutely, they're an important part of it. You just need to be aware of what that yield is, right? So if you're, depending on the institution you're working with, some are more competitive than others, right? So you could have a same FDIC insured high yield savings account, but one's at 4% and one's at 1.5%. And if you're sitting on a sizable amount, that could be a pronounced opportunity cost. And you want to make sure that the safe money, of course, is safe and it's liquid, right? There's some protections or guarantees around it, FDIC insured or, you know, so forth, but also that it's working for you.
We want to talk more about what should be liquid, what do you have tied up in your savings, and what do you have for your stock portfolio, and we've done that in some past podcasts if you want to go back and check those out as well. Even that the real estate, maybe you're lucky enough that you're waiting for that big inheritance that is going to come your way. But I recognize, Ryan, that with the time that we have left, I think what we need to do is say we have part two coming up.
Absolutely.
Next month, where we will continue to talk about your income plan, that 3 to 5 year runway that you have, and as you are approaching retirement, why it is that you need to get in touch with Ryan and be able to talk about all of these things through ClearPath Financial Partners. And Ryan, in our last 60 seconds, just give us that a little bit, that people can contact you, best way to do it, and they can ask you all of this in person.
Indeed, yeah. So check us out online. You can just Google us, of course, or our website is clearpathfinancialpartners.com. If you reach out, there is a contact us button that sends us an email, and somebody in our office, typically Karen, will reach out and schedule a call with myself or Molly to just see what's on your mind and if we can answer your questions and that sort of thing. And then, you know, we're happy to explain and be very candid if we're potentially best suited to help with those things you're looking for, or if there's another firm or service that would be better suited, and happy to, you know, make those introductions and provide people with those resources. So absolutely, you can certainly just give us a call, but if you check us out online and submit an inquiry, we're happy to chat.
For Ryan Kittredge, I'm Hank Stoltz. Thank you for joining us on the podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners.